This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
They can run it back and...
Right. They need help.
Use the formula.
No doubt.
They still need help. They need help, but like the whole idea of like, oh, it's going to slow down the playoffs and we got to run a bunch of pick and roll and all this stuff, that's kind of being proven wrong, you know?
Yes.
Like, I don't think you need to run 1,000 pick and rolls a game to have a successful half-court offense and to have a championship-level half-court offense. I think you got to just play your game and be damn good at it, to be honest. And I think the Grizzlies, as they showed this year, because, like, that offense, for better or worse, it was working. They were the second team in the East. They were a top-five team record-wise. And they were able to identify advantages that they had with Jaren Jackson Jr., but also, too, Ja Morant was putting on his passing clinic early.
Yep.
And their role players were playing, maybe like they're playing a little bit above their means a little bit, but like it enhanced your role players as well. Granted, it didn't enhance like a Zach Edey, but like Santi Aldama, Luke Kennard, Jalen Wells, guys like that, Jake Laravia, like it enhanced those guys. And I don't know. Like, it's just one of those things, like, continue to identify competitive advantages. And, you know, maybe we see more of that with Tomas Hiestelo having a full offseason and training camp
right,
to really put together how he wants his team to operate.
100%. We'll see. But, Parker, I appreciate it. Have fun at the wedding this weekend, and we'll catch up next week.
Awesome, Gabe. I appreciate it. See you next week.
Yes, sir. He is Parker Fleming at Paco_Flocka. Make sure you go subscribe to his free Grizzlies and NBA Draft Substack. He'll have a bunch of NBA Draft stuff coming out soon, huh, Connor? I mean, he's going to have you taken care of.
So I can tell
you. The full NBA Draft Guide.
I've been able to preview some of it. I say it all the time.
It's some of the best work.
It is some of the best NBA
draft
coverage you will see.
Yes.
Make sure you're subscribed to a Substack. If you want to sound smart with your friends,
correct,
make sure you are reading Parker Fleming. I will also add, he has some great breakdowns about the players that the Grizzlies could target this offseason and what it means that Jaren Jackson Jr. is not going to get that Supermax contract now. Go read Parker to be an informed Grizzlies fan.
Yeah, Parker doesn't pay us to say this. We
correct,
just read and we understand. What he puts out is some of the best work in town.
100%.
It truly is. But go subscribe to Substack Elitis. If you give monetary support, it goes to St. Jude because Parker's a grade A human being, and you can follow him on X at Paco_Flocka. Now we need to go ahead and get to hour number two. Hour number two of the Gabe Kuhn Show is here, and it's presented to you by the Memphis Showboats. Get your tickets now to see the Showboats at Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. One more game left. One more game, so go get those tickets now. UFL.com or call 901-341-7008. UFL.com or call 901-341-7008. Now let's bring on Jeff Calkins. He's a columnist of the Daily Memphian, also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 every single weekday right here at 92.9 ESPN on X. Jeff_Calkins. Jeff, how goes it?
I'm good. A little sleepy.
A little sleepy. What happened? Did you not get good rest last night?
Yeah. I mean, maybe not. Maybe okay, not. You know, I tend to get up pretty early to prepare for the radio show. So, I don't know. Sometimes you just get a little, you know, get a little logy.
Is it all that ruckus going on close to your house for Italian Fest? Is that what it is?
It's not. I'm not close enough to Italian
okay,
Fest to hear any ruckus.
Okay, gotcha.
I miss out on the ruckus. Do you go to Italian Fest?
Yeah, I do. I think I'm going to show up tonight with the wife and child and say hello
so
to a couple of friends.
Okay, you must have a...
Yeah, I have a couple of friends. I have a couple of friends who participate. Yeah, I just show up to their tents. And luckily, they're like steps away from each other, so I can just sort of rotate back and forth.
You can get a plate of spaghetti?
Yeah, I can get. Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
I can get drinks, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
do you need me to show you around?
No, I was a judge 1 year, and that was great. Like, it was great. They bring you in. They put on a big show. I had to learn to say gravy instead of sauce, you know? And
But I think there's a disagreement within the Italian community, should you call it gravy or sauce, but that's a different discussion for a different
time. Well, in this particular world, I called it, they instructed me to call it gravy.
Yes.
It was a gravy contest. It was a whatever. So, but, like, I've been asked to judge, there's a kosher barbecue contest every fall, and I've been asked multiple times to judge kosher barbecue, because who better to judge kosher barbecue than me? And so I routinely get asked, for this one, I don't know what faux pas I committed, but I was asked once to judge the contest and never again. So maybe I slipped and called it sauce or something. I don't know exactly what I, but it was fun. And obviously it's a great party over there at Marquette Park.
Yeah, it goes a little too late for my liking, you know. But when I was in college, it was great.
You don't have to stay forever.
In college, it was great.
Oh, you mean because... It's a ruckus.
People start by the time it gets to about 8:30, people are a little bit off the wall, but it's a good time.
Okay, but you don't have to stay the whole time.
I don't. But you know, it's early and earlier every year. That's how I feel. Earlier and earlier, they start to get out.
What happens, and that's why here at it is 5 o'clock, and I'm a little sleepy. I mean, it's what happens.
Got you. All right. I want to ask you, and I know you probably have a similar thought that you've had. I don't know, the past 5 years when it comes to the SEC and the Big Ten and college football and the place we're headed. But a lot made about Greg Sankey this week. Is that fair to say? A lot made about Greg Sankey's comments at SEC spring meetings. He went after the ACC and Big 12 for certain press releases that he thought were wrong. He said, don't lecture me about good of the game. I don't lecture anyone else about good of the game. I disagree with you, because sometimes you do. I know he only is looking out for his SEC constituents, if you will. But what do you make of, like, his tone and the way he talks about other conferences outside of the SEC having to catch up? And him not slowing down, it just further perpetuates what we know to be true and what the plans are for those two big conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, and how much oversight they want to have of the game. But what do you, like, your overall feeling of Greg Sankey when he says things like this?
Well, I mean, like, generally speaking, I know Greg Sankey is doing his job and has whatever else. Like, well, whatever. I don't hate Greg Sankey. I think anyone in that job, a lot of people in that job, would do it the same way. So just generally speaking, I do find it appalling, though. The tone this week, to be the biggest bully on the block and to simultaneously try to sound like you're being picked on and like people are treating you unfairly,
right,
whether it's the selection committee or critics or whatever else, to simultaneously literally be the most powerful conference in college football, who rules all, coming off of the year that they've had. Just look at what's happening. Look, just look at the upcoming baseball tournament.
Sure.
Look at what happened in the basketball, you know, in basketball this year, the year that they had. They become increasingly powerful, increasingly successful, and yet to be there whining about the criticisms. Listen, if you are going to rule the world, take what you want, destroy college football as you know it, you might actually have to occasionally acknowledge that you're wearing a black hat, like that you aren't, in fact, acting in the good of the game. And here's the fundamental thing for me is he says, don't lecture me about the good of the game, because here's the thing. They don't care about the good of the game. In other words, the larger good of the game, he does not consider to be in his job description. What he considers in his job description, and fair enough, is the good of the SEC, and particularly the good of the bank accounts in the SEC. That's what he considers to be his job description. And so if you don't have any responsibility to the larger good of the game, well, then that's fine. But you can't tell me that they are protecting the good of the game. It simply makes it's crazy to me that you have a entity that's supposed to appeal to the public and by the way, supposed to, these are universities.
Academics.
I would think that universities would have an obligation to something other than money, just money. Like literally, these are ivory towers. These are our places where things like learning and perspective and all of this should matter more than any place else. And the only thing that matters is maximizing dollars. And so you simply cannot explain to me how the convoluted playoff system that there seem to be on the verge of coming up with is for the good of the game. How is it for the good of the game for the SEC to have four, the Big Ten to have four, the ACC to – what it is, it's like – this is like feudal Europe where people have their little fiefdoms carved up, well, and their little armies, and like, I'll take what I – it's just crazy. Be prepared to take some criticism.
How much do you think, though – some of this is confirmation bias where they may think in their head they're doing the best for the consumer out there. And the reason I say that, bear with me, reason I say that is ratings have done nothing but go up with more marquee matchups in the college football playoff and in-conference matchups. Like, I wonder if that's part of the way he thinks is, well, I'm doing what the consumer likes. They want more of these matchups. Yeah, I'm making money hand over fist when I make all these changes, sure. And the TV revenue just keeps pouring in. But how much do you think they convince themselves they're doing the right thing because consumers continue to watch in droves? Because that's something I've tried to battle with and ask myself that question.
Well, I 100% believe that he rationalizes to believe that he thinks he's perfecting the good.
Sure.
People have an infinite capacity to rationalize whatever they're doing. And so I 100% believe he is rationalizing. I actually think that what he when he rationalizes – it probably has less to do with TV ratings, although that may be part of it, than to do with, you know what I need to do? I need to keep the money coming in to protect swimmers, you know, like whatever, to protect,
right.
Our other athletes and to protect the whatever else. And so he's thinking of the institutions of higher learning and all the athletes who don't play basketball and don't play football and whatever else. And so that, I suspect when he rationalizes, that's how he rationalizes. I've never believed that the health of the game is necessarily safely judged by
TV
ratings of the biggest games, right? Like that. That to me, honestly, just when you talk about the NBA, people are going to say that the health of the NBA is somehow negatively reflected if the NBA finals don't have great TV ratings. To me, the health of the NBA is whether in every single market across the NBA, whether it's Memphis or Oklahoma City or Portland or wherever else, or New York, you can believe that you can have a title team and can draw fans and whatever else. There's more to the health of the NBA than how many people are watching the finals, right?
Correct.
So I don't think TV ratings are a full judge. I think the health of college football is across this country, do people still love this game that they have loved for so long? Do they still go to the stadiums? Do they still feel a part of their universities? Does it still bind them to the institutions of higher learning that educated them and which they hold dear? Like there's much more than TV ratings here, but does he rationalize it? Can he? Of course he does. 100%. He thinks we're doing the best we can in this changing circumstances, and we have to keep revenues up to protect non-revenue sports and blah, 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 blah.
Do you have any take on the college football playoff going forward? Do you, at this point, with everything out there, do you personally care? As opposed to what it is right now, we have a 12-team playoff, it's going to be straight seeding. Do you care at all? Because I find myself day in, day out, while everybody on social media and all these reporters are talking about and giving opinions about the 16-team playoff or an 18-team playoff or a 24-team playoff, I find myself every single day looking at all these conversations saying, I don't care. What we have right now is fine with me.
Yeah, well, that's a form of caring, you know. Like, in other words,
when I say I don't care, if they switched it up, I guess at that point I don't really care that much anyway. It seems like they're still trying to be inclusive of group of five, at least one team.
I do care about this. I think if you go to 16, and I don't particularly care if they go to 16, that doesn't bother me, going to 16. I guess beyond that, it might start bothering me. You know, Jeffrey has this theory that he thinks they want to go to 24 ultimately. Like, at some point, I think it becomes ridiculous. So, but if they want to go to 16, that doesn't bother me at all. It seems entirely obvious to me that if they do that, and this is something that, Jeffrey was pointing, he was making on his show today, was that you want to appeal not just to hardcore college football fans, but you want to appeal to general fans, right? Yeah. To sort of the casual fans. And you don't want to have a playoff system that you have to sit down and explain it. You know, like, and honestly, with the buys last year, it became too complicated. I think it didn't help that the way the system worked last year. But if you simply have the top 16, the top five conference champions, and then you seed them 1 through 16, everyone can understand that. And by the way, it doesn't look like, even though the truth is that it'll still be cooked. Like, certain conferences will definitely have all kinds of advantages, but it won't look as fixed. You know, right. It won't look predetermined. It won't look like, what? I'm going to vote in this. It must be like voting in an election in a place where your vote's not going to matter. Right. Like, you know, where they fixed it in advance. And so, like, what? No matter what happens, the SEC can have the worst year in the history of the world, or the Big Ten can have the worst year in the history of the world, and they still get four?
Right.
And you get two, and you get one? That seems just crazy to me. And how are we going to – that? I do care. I think that seems – it seems deeply offensive. It's institutionalizing the inequities that we know exist already. Yeah. And maybe in that way it's a little more honest, I suppose.
Sure.
But it's institutionalizing them, and I resent that.
I think this goes in line, too, with, like, the Greg Sankey issue where he, you know, we talked about it already, where he feels like his schools are being picked apart. And, you know, not losing is better than it's a more – you know, coveted metric than strength of schedule. Well, like, there's a couple of things you need to break down there. One, if you're talking about Alabama, yeah, they had a good strength of schedule, but they lost to two of the worst teams, bottom half teams in that strength of schedule, in Vandy and Oklahoma. So, like, I don't know where the argument goes from there. And then also, I think it's worth mentioning, as we've mentioned since we've played college football, like, other schools don't have the opportunity to play the strength of schedule you have, and who's saying that they would struggle worse than you did with that schedule? It's just, you know, you wait the Big Ten and you wait the SEC. Their strength of schedules are always going to be good, but these other teams can only play who's in front of them in the ACC and the Big 12. So it's like, I get where you're coming from, but at the same time, you're stacking the deck against the teams who don't have the SEC and Big Ten schedule. And we've had that conversation as long as we played college football, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're overreacting to last year, very clearly. They're just overreacting to last year. But honestly, if you go to the 16-team playoff, you know, you would have had, in that circumstance, they already had four in, right, last year. They had three in last year. They had three in. They had, three yeah. in. They had Texas.
Georgia, Texas, Tennessee.
Tennessee. So, but they would have had Ole Miss, and they would have had Alabama. If you'd gone to 16, they would have had those two as well, right? So you would have had five. So what's the big deal? Like, I don't really get it. I don't really get it. Now, what they would say is that, again, all this stuff is connected. Do they want to go from an 8-game SEC schedule to a 9-game SEC schedule? And what the athletic directors evidently say is that we don't want to do that because, by definition, there will be 8 more losses between our teams, right, if we play another game. There will be 8 more losses to distribute around between our teams. And we don't want to take those losses because when they go up in front of the selection committee, we're going to be dinged for them. And so we don't want to go to a 9-game SEC schedule, which we want to do because for money reasons. Like, we want to because we want the more money that presumably would be dumped on our doorstep if we do that. But we don't want to do that unless we have automatic bids, because we're insecure about whether we will get the teams in that we want to get in with those extra games and extra losses. I think that is, again, I think it is stunning insecurity on the part of the most powerful conference in the country. And I just think they are wildly overreacting to Alabama and Ole Miss not being included.
Yeah, and to hammer away at this point after 2 years of Big Ten championships, I don't think it's not a coincidence, guys. I think that's pretty see-through. It's pretty transparent from where we sit. So, It is what it
so,
is.
So, yeah, I'm not a fan.
How about an expanded NCAA tournament? Charlie Baker talked at Big 12 spring meetings and said 72 or 76 teams. Wants to do that.
Again, they make decisions. Now, the truth of the matter is, if you look at the way the number of teams has expanded, and actually you can argue in favor of this. But the weird thing is that they keep doing things with no regard to what their fans want. Right?
Like, correct. Always.
I haven't heard anyone come out in favor of the 4-4-2-2-1 like plan in whatever. And I haven't heard anyone other than the college administrators say, you know, we need to go to whatever, 70, however many teams. Like, literally, they don't give a damn about what their customers seem to want. It's fairly startling, but it's obvious. It's just, and to some extent, it is the pressures of NIL, the pressures of revenue sharing, the pressures, the financial pressures that all these institutions are feeling after having years and years and years of not having to pay the players or share their money with the players. Now, all of a sudden, they have had to, and so they're reacting in all of these ways, which is to bring in more money. And in particular, you know, you know what's going to happen. It's not going to mean there's more underdogs who are going to get in. It just means
even
a greater share of the Big 12 will get in. You know, that's
and what makes
means,
me laugh
know?
Is Charlie Baker bringing up Indiana State. If you expand, you're not worried about Indiana State,
no,
Charlie. Please stop.
Sure.
Don't do that. Like, we're not. We may act dumb online. We're not that dumb.
Right. That's not who it's for. That's not who it's for.
Yeah, we're expanding it so, you know, we can get the Missouri Valley in. That's what we're doing. It's not about North Carolina and the bubble teams from the Big 12. It's about the Missouri Valley Conference and the A-10 and the AAC. Yeah. But sell that somewhere else because that doesn't work here. But, Jeff, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining.
Thanks, Gabe. Yep. Join Italian Fest. Bye.
Yes, sir. He is Jeff Calkins at Jeff_Calkins on X, Daily Memphian Columnist. Also host of the Jeff Calkins Show 9 to 11 right here at 92.9 FM ESPN every single weekday. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll have more of the Gabe Kuhn Show coming up next, including a preview of what we could see tonight in Game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals. Make sure you stick around. Back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN. We already saw the Thunder punch their ticket to the NBA Finals, and we have another chance tonight to see another team punch their ticket to the NBA Finals. That would be the Indiana Pacers are up 3-1 on the New York Knicks. Teams leading playoff series 3-1 have a 284-13 all-time record. I know it's going to be an MSG. There's going to be a chance that the Knicks come out swinging, try to fight for their playoff lives, but the Pacers being up 3-1 is pretty telling in itself. When you look at the Pacers and you talk about them playing on the road, they have done that very well so far these playoffs. For those that are unaware, they are 6-1 in road games in these NBA playoffs. Stole the first two from the Knicks, stole a couple in the Bucks series, and they've been able to handle business even away from home. I think one of the biggest stories, though, if you have not been enlightened to this and you're not familiar, Karl-Anthony Towns for the Knicks is going to be a game-time decision for Game 5 tonight. That changes up just about the entirety of the thought process when you're talking about the New York Knicks. If he's hobbled or cannot go at all, it's just really hard to imagine the Knicks being able to extend this series.
Carlisle would get his wish and see more Precious Achiuwa minutes if Karl-Anthony Towns isn't able to give it a go, but he has been massive for them and just keeping them in game. Some of the runs he has had, he's played some of the best basketball.
He won them game 3.
100%. He's played some of the best basketball of his career in the Pacers series. I know that they're down 3-1, but it's not because of Karl-Anthony Towns. He has been very good. He's been keeping them in these basketball games. He's been better on defense than you expected him to be. He's really toned down the dumb fouls that he was making earlier in the playoffs. It would be a big-time loss for them if he wasn't able to give it a go, because after he got injured in the fourth quarter, it was, I think that the Knicks got within like 6 points when he bumped knees. And after that, he wasn't able to move well. They were attacking him on defense. And the Knicks look like a different team when Karl-Anthony Towns isn't out there. Now, Mitchell Robinson has given them a lot of good minutes, but Mitchell Robinson also got hurt last game. He turned his ankle and he was dealing with the turned ankle. So it seems like that the injuries might be stacking up against the Knicks at the worst possible time, because being down 3-1 to a team like the Pacers is danger zone.
One of the most it is the danger zone. Nice job. Well done, brother. One of the most interesting things about this Pacers team that I've been thinking about is when we talk about NBA playoff basketball historically, what do we talk about, right? We talk about the whistle being held. We talk about pace not mattering as much.
Half
you
court.
Get out and run, you play in the half court in a very general sense. Defense has to step up, that type of thing. That's what we talk about when we talk about historical NBA playoff basketball. The Pacers have really sort of shattered that idea this season, it feels. They have scored a lot of points. They have a 130 game, multiple 120 games, 129, 138, all that. And they have played with the same pace that they did in the regular season, and they have played the same rotation. Another thing about NBA playoff basketball, we talk about the rotation has to shorten down to about 7, maybe 8 guys at most. And those 7th and 8th guys are maybe getting 10 minutes a game. They're playing 9 guys just like they did during the regular season, and they're getting substantive contributions out of every single one of them. So I know they're a good team. I know Tyrese Halliburton's great. I know they were in the Eastern Conference Finals a year ago, but they are doing a job of sort of shattering our long-standing thoughts about NBA playoff basketball with the way they have won games this postseason. And I find that really interesting.
I think they're doing it in a similar way to what we've seen the Oklahoma City Thunder do. The
sure.
Thunder are doing it to a higher degree, but the Pacers play with pace. They turn you over. They're efficient with the basket.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And they don't have a weak spot defensively.
Yes.
I think one thing this playoff specifically has taught you is if you have a defense where there isn't somebody you can exploit, you will be a very difficult team to beat, and you can cause these runs. You can have these 20-6 runs at the end of games because teams are not able to score on you at will. They can't just pick on one guy over and over and over again. And then they also have Pascal Siakam, who I think as a veteran is exactly what you want as an NBA team. He's leading the teams in points per game this postseason. He's showing up when it matters most. And to your point, the Pacers have actually gone up in points per game during the postseason. They're scoring
right.
1.5 more points per game, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but when they were already one of the highest scoring teams in the NBA, them increasing that in the playoffs has been phenomenal. And I think that Aaron Nesmith right now, if the playoffs ended today, I think he'd have the highest three-point percentage we have seen. He's shooting like 51% from three right now during the playoffs. They have just, all of their players are excelling at the right time for them. They play well together. They are a team with depth. There's not a weak spot on defense, and all of them can score. All of them can score.
The depth, though, like we've looked back at their playoff run, and some people would say, okay, this is improbable. The comeback they had against the Bucks,
Nesmith's
the comeback,
shooting 51.9%.
The multiple comebacks they had against the Knicks, and what they were able to do on a consistent basis. Like, we look back at those things, we say, okay, those were unbelievable. And yeah, some of them are. Like, they've done something 3 times out of 4, and you know, since 1997, and coming back from what was it, 20 down with 6 minutes to go, whatever the hell it was. I don't have the stat right in front of me, but they've done some very improbable things when we look at the history of the NBA. But like, part of that shouldn't be surprising to us in the idea that like these comebacks that they have had. I think a lot of the reason they've been able to play from behind as well as they have is the depth that they possess as opposed to the teams they're going against and the pace they play at.
Yes.
You tire teams down. Even if they have a 20-point lead, that's not safe because you're tiring teams down. You're able to expend more energy because you have more guys on the floor, more minutes distributed. So, like, they've used something that has not been an advantage historically in the NBA playoffs, and they've used it to their advantage.
Well, I'm curious if this is a sign of the NBA to come in the future.
That's sort of the question I have.
Because of how the CBA causes teams to build rosters. You can have a top-heavy team, but that top-heavy team's not going to get you as far in the playoffs necessarily. You've been seeing it through these playoffs. You have to have a full roster. You have to be able to go about 8 or 9 deep. That is what is necessary now to win an NBA title. It is just what you need right now. You can't just win with 1 or 2 superstars or 3 superstars or stars. I mean, you usually have 1 superstar and then 2 other ancillary stars. But when you look at their roster, it's just when you have the ability to bring somebody like T.J. McConnell, Obi Toppin, Benedict Mathurin off of your bench, and then you can sprinkle in a Thomas Bryant or a Jairus Walker or a Ben Shepherd when you need to. That is so advantageous to a team. And that's why, like, they are very similarly built to the Thunder. Again, I think the Thunder do it at a higher level, but that's why, like, this potential matchup of the Pacers and Thunder, I think, is going to be fascinating. Is it going to be good for ratings? No.
Who cares,
and I'm not going to make that
honestly?
Argument. But if you enjoy basketball and efficient basketball and good defense and good offense, great coaching, you have star players in it, even though they may not be sexy, but they are still star players. They're just not flashy players. It's going to be really exciting basketball. Now, tonight is one of those games. It's going to be in New York. I wouldn't be shocked if the Knicks were able to pull out this game tonight. Their back's up against the wall. Even without Karl-Anthony Towns, you might get a heroic effort from somebody like Jalen Brunson or a Mikal Bridges or even a Josh Hart might come out and shoot up a ton of threes again like he did against the Boston Celtics, but you can steal the game. But it does feel like that we are on a pathway to where we're going to see the Pacers and Thunder basically playing the same style of basketball, and it's going to be a fascinating series.
Who's better at it?
Who's
Which I would lean to the Thunder, of
probably
course,
so.
From a talent perspective.
Probably so, yeah. But the depth piece is going to be really interesting because they'll be able to match the Thunder's depth. What they might not be able to match is the historic defense that they have, and
Correct.
That's probably why, overall, I would pick the Thunder to win an NBA Finals matchup against the Pacers. But I do think it would go 6 games.
And I do appreciate the Pacers. One thing that has been sort of not considered with the pace they play, really well-conditioned team. Really well-conditioned.
Very much so.
Honed in, nobody out of shape. And if you want to get in shape, make sure you go sign up for LA Fitness.
Very good.
LA Fitness. Right now, you can get a free 3-day trial. Go to LAFitness.com. But whether you're like me and just want to keep blood pressure down, stay around for your family, or you want to get in better condition, you want to run a marathon, you want to improve your PRs and bench and squat, they have all that available to you at LA Fitness. There is 7 Memphis area locations to choose from. You're always going to have one close to home and close to work. You can join for $0 down and then $24.99 per month. Pretty good deal. $24.99 is for one club. If you want to get access to all 7 clubs, that's $29.99 per month. And if you need some babysitting or somebody to watch over your kids while you are working out, they have that available to you. The Kids Club is $10 per month per child. If you've paid for childcare, you know that is a good deal. But join now for $24.99 per month at LA Fitness, $59 annual to access any single club in the Memphis area. Membership auto renews and requires first and last month's dues at joining. Additional terms and conditions apply. Make sure you go to LAFitness.com and check it all out. Now, I, for small talk today, want to take a different approach. I have a question for everybody out there. I have a question for Connor about this. And it has to do with the college football playoff. We'll discuss it next. And Small Talk is presented by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, with Big Ten and SEC and Big 12 spring meetings going along right now, there's been a lot of discussion about the college football playoff. Now, here's what I can tell you to be a fact. You have one more year guaranteed of the 12-team playoff. What has to happen between now and December 1st is there has to be an agreement made on behalf of the college football playoff for 2026's format. I guess theoretically, even though this is not what's going to happen, they could stick with 12 teams. More likely, they're going to go to 16 teams. With the 16-team playoff, everyone has a different idea of how it should look. There's some people that will say automatic qualifiers is the way to go. 4-4, there's a 4-4-2-2-1 format where the Big Ten and the SEC get 4 automatic qualifiers. The Big 12 and the ACC get 2 automatic qualifiers. The Group of 5 gets 1 automatic qualifier. Then you have 3 at-larges. Lane Kiffin, Coaching at Ole Miss says the best would be 16 teams and 16 teams all at large. Okay. Coaches in the SEC, and I think most of the coaches and ADs and presidents in the Big 12, when they were talking with Brett Yormark, said that they liked the idea of the five automatic qualifiers. Five automatic qualifiers would be four automatic qualifiers from basically the Power Four conferences, and then you'd have one group of five conference winner that gets in there. But the top five conference winners would be in, then you'd have 11 at-larges. What the question is out there that people are asking themselves is, what do you prefer most? And, Connor, is it wrong that I've gotten to the point that I just don't care anymore? Is it wrong that I feel that way? Because the facts surrounding the change in format of the college football playoff remain here for me. The two people that have the sort of unilateral decision-making power here are the people that make the most money and run the biggest conferences in America and the Big Ten and the SEC. I feel like the conversation around the format of the college football playoff has become less about what needs to happen for the good of the game, and it's devolved into what needs to happen for the good of the most powerful people in the game. It's constant change for change's sake at this point. We can't stick to a format. Big conferences are posturing. Look at what Greg Sankey did all this week at spring meetings, acting like he's put upon. It's like, no, you're not. And then, again, it's the most powerful people making the decisions on behalf of their people. They're not worried about the rest of the other eight conferences in the United States of America. So, as much as I want to see a good product, I have resigned myself to this spot where I just feel defeated already. The ACC, the Big 12, second-class citizens, anybody beyond that, you're third-rate citizens. Is that fair? Because the more I see this conversation, the more I'm turned off by it, because I know where this ends, and I know the direction the Big 10 and the SEC went ahead.
I think it's fair. I am very much in agreement with what Jeff said. I was okay with expanding the college football playoff. I'm fine with 16 teams. Just make something that is easy to understand.
Sure.
If it's 5-11, fine. If it's the 4-4-2-2, fine. Just do something that is easy to understand and follow, so I don't have to do.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Some giant chart to figure out what's going
Connor,
on.
Connor, I'm just
football.
Beyond the point where, like, number of teams.
They're going to do whatever
12,
they want.
12, 16, 14, 18, 24, 64. I don't care anymore. Just make the decision you're going to make and stop all the posturing.
Yes. And stop pretending like it's for the betterment
right.
of college athletics.
Right. So I guess that's where I'm at. People are going to continue to have these conversations, argue back and forth, and bicker about what they think is best for the college football playoff. And I'm telling you, and I think Connor fits into this boat, we don't care.
Just make a decision. Just make a decision.
And stop complaining at every opportunity. And I know this sounds defeatist, but I'm smart enough to know when you are defeated, when you can't control the outcome of your own destiny. The Big Ten and the SEC have all the cards. They are playing with a priceless vase back and forth, and they have the power to drop it and break it. So I guess going forward, when it comes to college football playoff talk, until they make a decision, I don't care, and I probably won't even speak on it all that much, to be completely honest with you. Hour number three is on the way, and Kyron Samuels will lead us off. He has some college football.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.